This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and we're brought to you by the Vodoliak Law Group, fighting insurance companies since 1963, and BetChicago.com, your source for all Chicago sports and betting news.
Third and 17. Max strips it. He is unbelievable.
Bears our life.
Bears our life.
Bears our life. Over one straight hour of Bears talk with Draft Dr. Phil each and every Monday night. Bears our life. Bears our life. Bears our life. Over one straight hour of Bears talk with Draft Dr. Phil each and every Monday night. Coming hard every Monday night, Central 10 East, giving out prescriptions for the Bears fan with the Bear disease. Jumping in the chat room with the bar fronts, bringing knowledge. The show's an honest course if it's football was a college. Step into the barroom, Dr. Phil is the host. Someone dives through the window from the open to the close. Talking live on the air, best known for my devotion. First they fill my last adoption. Guests on the show seek the serum of the truth. 365 of Bears talk in the barroom. The tape doesn't lie with Mitchell. 7 steps drops, no doubt. How is the leap? Cause we never flip fly.
Bears our life.
Bears our life. Bears our life. Bears our life. Bears our life. With my guy Phil as in Draft Dr. Phil.
Bears our life. Over one straight hour of Bears talk with Draft Dr. Phil each and every Monday night.
Shotgun Trubisky. And a touchdown to Cole. Nothing tricky about that.
Over one straight hour.
Strips it. He is unbelievable.
Each and every Monday night.
Hey. Play action looking for a wide open receiver. And it's a touchdown for Trey Burns. Sack lose the ball, and Mac took the ball away.
Never blowing smoke, keep it 100 from the start. Head over to the swag shop, get the sticker for your car. Monday through Friday, the barroom's got you covered. VHL places ads, cause Fuller's got you smothered. Draft Dr. Phil, it's always hit sticks. Splitting double deeps like 96 and keep hitting our life. Keeps growing, Mitchell keeps throwing. Dimes on time and Allen Robinson showing. Hands through the truth, collaborating with a fan. We got a moderator, Dr. Phil is a man. Bears our life.
Bears our life.
Over one straight hour of Bears talk with Draft Dr. Phil each and every Monday night.
Hey,
Bears our life.
Bears our life.
Yo, keep it 100, baby.
Max strips it.
Dumps again. Akeem Hicks.
Yo, real quick, real quick.
Trubisky to the 42-yard line. Oh, my goodness. Will get sacked, lose the ball, and Mac took the ball away.
Here's an interception. Kyle Fuller down the sideline and knocked out of bounds at the 10-yard line.
Bears our life. Bears our life. Over one straight hour of Bears talk with Draft Dr. Phil each and every Monday night. Hey, Bears our life.
Bears our life.
Bears our life. Bears our life. Over one straight hour of Bears.
Defensively, I thought it was great to see the takeaways and the touchdowns. Two touchdowns in the second quarter. Opportunistic football. Guys flying around, tipping balls in the air. Extra effort plays, I thought, and I was looking for one or two individuals that stood out in the game defensively, but it was everybody. It was all 11 on that side of the ball. You got guys on defensive line getting pressure, collapsing the pocket, getting their hands up. I thought 91 Eddie Goldman had a heck of a game. I thought he was sneaky good yesterday. Linebackers collectively between the two of them with Danny and Roquan, I thought was both of them was probably their best game of the year, flying around, making tackles. And then the DBs speak for themselves. They made plays. They tackled. They were flying around. Again, I use the word opportunistic is the best way to use it with them. And then, again, just a play such as at the end of the game when Amos made a play in the end zone on a jump ball to Benjamin. He knocked the ball out. It was just an effort play where a bigger guy made a nice catch and then he knocked it out with the play. So that was good.
Victory Monday, Bears fans. This is Bears Hour Live. I'm your moderator for the day, Greg Braggs Jr. We have a very special guest joining us tonight, Greg Thompson from the Cover One Buffalo podcast. He'll go over this big Bears blowout win and everything in between for all you barflies. And the man that needs no introduction, the Doctor of Truth, DDP, Draft Dr. Phil, is here for you as well, as he is every Monday night, bringing the fire and passion. Who would have thought, Bears fans, that at the halfway point of this season, the Chicago Bears would be sitting atop the NFC North? Well, for one, there's been Draft Dr. Phil. He's told you to believe in this team from the start. I know I'm a believer. Are you? Tonight, he's here to drop some more knowledge for you. So without further ado, the moment we've all been waiting for, here is Draft Dr. Phil's rant.
All right. Thank you, Greg Braggs. Wow. Bears Hour Live, Victory Monday. I got a lot to say, though. This is the greatest game in the world, football. It's the ultimate team sport. Gladiators on the football field, on every team. There are stars that wouldn't or couldn't be stars without the help of those fabric players, as the smartest man, Shane Marsall, refers to them. This great game is relied on the backs of togetherness, of teammates, overcoming obstacles and odds each and every time that whistle blows to kick off a game. This happens on every level of football. Teams that are coached well and disciplined can beat any team any given Sunday, any given Friday night or Saturday, anytime. On this past Sunday, I felt very confident that the Chicago Bears would win their game decidedly versus the Buffalo Bills. I spoke all offseason about the talent on this roster and about putting it together, being aggressive on both sides of the football. Chicago listened. And where I may not agree with Matt Nagy's personnel usage and his ability in situational football with certain decisions, I do see transparency. I do see growth as a leader of the team. The team is a reflection of the head coach, and it's his job, the job of a head coach, to get as much out of the talent as he possibly can, motivate them to the levels with which their confidence and their abilities overwhelm opponents and overflow on the football field. The nastiness that the Bears showcased on Sunday defensively, it's what we talked about the past few weeks in these losses that was missing. Confidence, togetherness. That defense that had a huge hand in the offense, they were let down in losses. This Sunday, the defense came to play. Now, narratives are going to be drawn in a fantasy football world, and I see Nagy sometimes too worried about his QB, his young passers' confidence, listening to noise on the outside, thus trying to up his statistical game. Now, you can agree with me or not, but it's been my real concern with Coach Nagy. Cutesy plays and short yardage and critical situations in football. Now, my colleague took a little liberty with me on Sunday, but I explain it here and now. Jordan Howard is an elite running back. Watch New Orleans and LA use elite runners. They don't line them up at fullback and short down and distance. They don't get predictable and they don't get cute. My issue isn't being cute. It's not consistent. It's not the play you go to that says we're going to smash you and smack you in the face. You don't line up on the backup interior, making your formation tight. Put Jordan Howard at fullback. It's a tell. Not a time to run a gimmick play. Spread them out. Use the strength of the Bills against themselves and run it down their throats. Run a QB sneak if you have to continue drives. These types of things, albeit on Sunday, didn't hurt the Bears, but they will hurt you on a championship Sunday. I want to point out two players, though, in particular, that fought against the grain of the narrative. Now here on this show, it's documented through audio historically. It's never deleted. Both players were given large sums of money. I was critical of Pace for letting Alshon Jeffrey walk, leaving Mitch with terrible weapons. But in 2017, he listened to Bears Barroom. He listened to my pleads with Adam Hoge coming on the show that I refused to cave in saying, we need Kyle Fuller here. He's a fit. You don't let homegrown talent go when there's a critical fit for the defensive philosophy of your future already on the team. I think you see Kyle Fuller and you see his critical fit in the defense and the trust that he has in the scheme. No matter what, he needed to be retained, tagged, supported. On Sunday, you saw, like most of this season, why he's essential in the championship run. He's elite. Let's face it. Nationally, he's not going to be recognized, but here I'm going to tell you he's elite. He's the reason and part of every turnover on the Sunday in Orchard Park. His confidence soars, as does the Bears. He got paid, and he's playing, and he's paying it back to the fans and the team that believed in him. Now, one's going to talk about that deadly drop versus Green Bay, but he refused to define himself with that. And last but not least, number 91. He got paid, and most non-Bears barroom people were like, why? The smartest man talked about his importance. You've heard me talk about how important the nose guard is, and Eddie Goldman, heard Danny Shimon. It's important. Come out and dominate from the start to finish. Eddie goes, steps up, and makes life miserable on opposing offensive lines. A gladiator, a warrior, who is paid and supported by his franchise for a reason. He does the grunt work. Two dynamic, intricate pieces stand out in different ways as gladiators on Sunday to help their team go to the top, rise to the top of the division. In a game full of stars, so many standouts, I felt compelled to shower praise on the two who got paid, the gladiators, who could be easy targets. The Bears are on the right path now. They are a young team, a young head coach with a young QB. And in a young man's game, a team on the right path, on the right direction, ready to embrace your talent. Every drive, every play, make it your best. Embrace it. Embrace it. Because not one team wants to face what you saw on Sunday. Just ask the Buffalo Bills. And that is my rant.
Wow, Phil. I always love the fire and passion you bring to the rants. I mean, I don't know about you, Barflies, but sometimes I just want to run through a brick wall after listening to those. You hit the nail on the head, Phil. This defense got back to their identity this week. I mean, without their leader the last 2 weeks, too, it makes it all that much more impressive.
Absolutely. I mean, you talk about it without Khalil Mack and him coming back. You saw players step up, rise to the occasion. I just felt it was important to point out those two players that got paid and to showcase Ryan Pace's plan, his intricate plan for the future, Greg.
You got to love what Ryan Pace has done. Like you said, making paying up the guys that rewarding the good play with Eddie Goldman and Kyle Fuller. That makes the rest of the team know that they're going to get done right by them as well. You know, I have to agree with you. Ryan Pace is doing a hell of a job here for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, and, he is. What do we got, though, tonight?
Oh, man. Well, like you said, man, the Buffalo, they had to go up against some gladiators yesterday. So today, we have the co-host from the Cover One Buffalo podcast, a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan and a self-proclaimed generally likable know-it-all. You can find him on Twitter talking all week long about football. Greg Thompson joins us, and welcome to the show, Greg.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks a lot. Excited to be here tonight. Come in, take some of my humble pie, take some medicine here, but you know, looking forward to talking to everybody about what we saw yesterday.
Well, I thank you for coming on the show, Greg. Again, I said before the show in the warm-up session, there's two Gregs, so he's going to be Braggs, you're going to be Greg. We got the super producer behind the boards. We got Barflies ready to ignite, and I'm excited on a victory Monday, but I really want to thank you because, you know, it says a lot about a person who covers the football team. I know I get nervous. I get emotional. I don't sit down much, as my wife could say, during the game. So for you to come on the show and give us your take on what you saw from the opponent's eye, that is always valuable to me because if you could self-scout, if you can get another coach's opinion, if you get another person's opinion, it could benefit you tremendously. So I want to thank you for coming on. I'm not going to make you feel bad or give you any humble pie. We will have a lot of fun, but I really intend to get down and dirty with you.
No, I appreciate it. And I think, you know, it's a healthy discussion. And like you said, it being able to step back and look at what to expect, what somebody else sees, a fresh set of eyes can bring something new to the table.
Well, let me get right into it because something is so important to me. It was going to be a later on question, but I want to start off with it because I think it's necessary because one of my colleagues was in Buffalo. She was watching the game, and I'm not of this breed. I tend to be very fiery, as in my disposition is what, but I'm a nice guy, I intend, but I just don't make friends with the opponent. But something that she said really ignited my curiosity, and I wanted to ask you, as a Buffalo fan, true blue, you know, at what point in your professional opinion does this fan base in Buffalo go from "we know we suck and it's fun" to "we suck and this is completely unacceptable"?
It's a good question. It's something that, and sadly, you've kind of become galvanized to, you've become conditioned to over the years. You know, obviously last year breaking the drought and being able to get into the playoffs for the first time in 17 years, yeah. That was exciting. But that was also 17 years of conditioning and 17 years of getting used to really poor, terrible football. So it's something that I think there's a dose of patience here. Everybody knows that they're eating $55 million in dead cap. It doesn't make it okay. You know, days like yesterday are infuriating and frustrating and embarrassing, but it doesn't terribly change the long-term view of what we're trying to put together. So I think it's trying to be able to compartmentalize and separate. It can really suck in the moment, but it doesn't need to lead to overreaction and crazy hot takes.
Well, when you look at the Chicago Bears team that came in there and you look at this defense, you know, I've been critical of their tackling against the Jets. They really, two games prior against New England and against the Dolphins, Vic Fangio's game plan was heavily put into question by us at Bears Barroom with the soft zones and dropping your pass rushers and the whole nine. The last 2 weeks without Khalil Mack, we've gone aggressively into man, a lot of press zone, a lot of 4-3 under nickel looks. So you've seen a lot of a difference. What was your takeaway from this Bear defense, number one? Number two, is this Bears defense, in your mind, and we'll get to the offense, playoff caliber?
One, absolutely. I think that being able to put together the performance that you guys have shown now back-to-back weeks, you know, granted against subpar offenses both weeks, but to be able to rest someone of the premier caliber of, you know, of Mac, and then being able to still put together the performances that you showed, I think speaks to the sustainability of what you guys have put together. I think Vic Fangio is universally revered and respected across the league. He hasn't always had the pieces to put together what he really wants. And I think now, you know, you touched on it on the opening rant, you know, Goldman is such an underappreciated figure and really dominated a lot of the game that took away running lanes that Chris Ivory and LeSean McCoy had. And being able to have that team step up and put together that kind of performance without their lead dog, I think really speaks to what kind of sustainability you guys can expect now getting into this nasty division stretch. And then what I think is very reasonable, a nice playoff run.
Now, when you look at the Bears, what was your game plan or would have been your game plan going into this game in regards to defending the Chicago Bears?
Sure. And obviously, we'll have to speak a little bit hypothetically because once you see, you know, we'll take two separate games. Obviously, the first quarter was very much what I expected. It was, you know, a muddy, you know, slog of a game, a lot of punting back and forth, good defense from both sides, really keeping things in check. Then when you see that crazy snowball effect in the second quarter where, you know, obviously Nathan Peterman was Nathan Peterman, you start to see those things unravel, you start to see those things go, that really skews the rest of the game where the game plan's kind of out of play, where you're not able to play a lot of things. Obviously, I think the Bears dialed it back quite a bit in their approach, so it was hard to take a lot away from there. My overall impression was to focus on Tariq Cohen. That was going to be their number one impression. And relatively, they did that. He obviously had some incredible returns and took a couple of 5-10-yard losses and turned them into 5-yard gains. But overall, he was relatively kept in check for the, you know, the weapon that he can be. So I think you could see the Bills' focus was on controlling Tariq Cohen, and I think that's rightfully so. I think he's turned into a really game-breaking talent. I think that early on they had, you know, some things in check for Jordan Howard, and then eventually you see a guy who's, you know, 238 pounds, that kind of sledgehammer that isn't fun to tackle the 7th, 8th, 10th, 15th, 20th time. You know, later on he starts to lay the wood, and you saw some of those runs. I think, you know, one being that Jordan Poyer attempted tackle down by the goal line where he crumpled him into a small tinfoil ball and then ran the rest of the way for the touchdown. I'm pretty sure Poyer's feeling that one today. So, again, early on, it was very much what I expected, and I think that they had their game plan in place. And the Bills have shown if you get some easy scores, short fields, 14 points, our offense is simply not in position to come back from that or to compete with that. So it got away from them, and then you saw the ugly game the rest of the way that we did.
Now, I want to ask you this question. It might be a little redundant, but how good are the Buffalo Bills? You had the strongest strength of schedule coming into week 8. Your defense ranked 4th in yards allowed, a defense that was very, very stout against the run. It was completely aggressive. You saw them against the New England Patriots keep the goat out of the end zone. How good is this Bills defense? Because the national narrative, to me, any given Sunday, always. And here, you heard the smartest man, you heard Aldo, on 100 Proof, you heard a lot of people concerned, you know, you can't overlook this team. So how good are the Bills defensively in your eyes?
Defensively, when, you know, having the full complement, I really think are a top-notch defense. I won't try to say they're the best defense in the NFL, but they can be on any given Sunday. They certainly can be the best defense in the NFL for that dank game. Two elements that were missing. They've built a lot of theirs on similar to the model you saw with the Eagles last year. They run an 8-man defensive line rotation where no one plays more than 60% of the snaps and everyone plays at least 30%. They were missing Trent Murphy, who really is a nice complement to Jerry Hughes. That was a little bit rough. You're now digging a little bit deeper into the rotation there. And they're missing their rookie, Tremaine Edmonds. You know, between the Bears and the Bills, you guys got my top two wish list items in Roquan Smith or Tremaine Edmonds. So he's been a rookie, just like Roquan Smith. You've seen some, you know, some young player mistakes and things there. But you can't coach 6'5", 250, who runs a 4.48. There's no substitute for that. And when you run that Tampa 2 style defense, having that kind of range and size in the middle, a couple of those long third down conversions, those are plays that he gets a hand on. And that he, you know, you don't get behind him the way you get behind Julian Stanford, who's a career journeyman and rightfully a backup. So with their full complement, I think that they have a defense that sadly we're wasting this year. But there's enough young pieces, Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, you know, Tremaine Edmonds. There's enough pieces going forward that I think it's the core of our team and can keep us in any game. You saw that with Tennessee. You obviously saw that with Minnesota. You saw that in Houston. We had Houston on the ropes, and then Nathan Peterman becomes Nathan Peterman. You saw that for the first 3.5 quarters with the Patriots, that if they keep the game in check, if we're able to minimize mistakes, they can keep any team in the game. It's just our offense. If we simply had just the worst offense in the league, but right there at the worst, not the worst offense in NFL history, you know, we'd be in a lot more games being able to put up points. But when you have that kind of lack of offensive skill set, it really limits what we're able to do.
Well, to piggyback off this, it really lends itself to Bears fans, because here you are talking, Greg, and you're talking about a great defense. And across the way, honestly, I saw this team live. I was so upset with Vic Fangio those 2 weeks against the GOAT and against the Miami Dolphins and Brock Osweiler, and how he thought to attack them. It just baffled me. We had Schofield on here. He was baffled by it. Granted, the Bears gave 14 points to the Patriots in a close loss on special teams. And then against Brock Osweiler, it was just unbelievable how this defensive coordinator called the game, because the talent on this football team, to your point about the Buffalo Bills, to go along with an offense that is leading into my next question, led by Mitch Trubisky, Jordan Howard, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton, Allen Robinson wasn't even in the game, probably your number one receiver, but you got this rookie, Anthony Miller, standing out and running routes and getting open. This team has consistency. Maybe you're in the middle of the pack on offense, but I honestly don't see a better defense in the league when they're being aggressive. And you heard it in my rant. You said it yourself with Eddie Goldman inside, Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, Roy Robertson Harris. Put them out to the edge. Let them destroy people. Don't click on any weird links. You might get, catfished or something. You got to keep and continue. And hopefully you get Leonard Floyd situationally to get in there and rush the pass or whatever. But this team, to your point of the Buffalo Bills having a great defense but a subpar offense, I think it lends itself to the formula for the Bears to not only win this division, but to be right in the race to get into the playoffs. What say you about that?
I absolutely think so. We could talk about this a little bit more later on, but the Bears are absolutely the model that the Bills are following. You know, mm-hmm. I know that you guys had a lot of frustration last year with, you know, how can you develop or how can you even evaluate a rookie quarterback like Trubisky when he has no weapons and that Cameron Meredith is your number one target and he's missing for half the year. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the Bills fans conversation is at. And then we're hoping that coming in with our 10 draft picks and $90 million in cap room, that we can have the kind of offseason that I think Ryan Pace put together for you guys and bringing in Trey Burton, Taylor Gabriel, drafting Anthony Miller, which my co-host in the Cover One Buffalo podcast, Aaron Quinn, I think Anthony Miller was his number one target going into the draft. You know, obviously, Allen Robinson is a stud, you know, kind of player, you know, solidifying the offensive line. Being able to bring in those kind of players, you now put that around a quarterback in his second year that is able to develop and take a step forward. And, you know, I think yesterday was a great example of Mitch Trubisky's game where, you know, he hit a couple of those critical third and longs. You also had a couple balls thrown at guys' feet. You had a couple that were off by a pretty healthy margin. But when you put him in an advantageous situation with a great defense and playmakers around him, you're not laying everything at his feet where he has to be the reason that you win or lose. You're allowing him to develop and grow. Maybe year five, year six, he's that number one, I'm leading the show. Right now, you're allowing him to grow into that, mm-hmm. and that you can afford to have a misthrow here or there, and he can use his athleticism and pick some of those things up. And it puts you into position, and what you talked about, that defense is really coming together. I think that, you know, some players that maybe the average fan doesn't realize is there and in the kind of position that you guys are in, but having that kind of defense where people don't even realize Eddie Jackson's there, or you don't even know that you have Prince Amukamara, or that, hey, I thought that Leonard Floyd was a bust. What's going on? Or that, hey, your backup is Aaron Lynch, and guys who have made plays in other areas. You guys have built a really deep, really capable defense that, like I said earlier, being able to sit Khalil Mack, and granted, it's taken with a grain of salt when it's against the Bills offense right now. So, you know, that they should look good, but they did. And that's all you can ask is that, hey, you know, you can't look any better than what the offense is in front of you. And with the Bills offense that's been historically poor, you should dominate them. And you guys did. You dominated from start to finish. You cut off running lanes. You didn't allow anyone to get anything going. You know, there was some feel good garbage points at the end that I think the defense was playing pretty vanilla. But being able to do that, I think, should give you guys some hope for some really sustainable success moving forward.
And when you look at Mitch Trubisky, especially in this kind of football game where you're getting turnovers and people are scoring and there's really no consistency and what have you, you talked about Mitch hitting those three critical third down plays when you had, I thought, and we'll get into this. I have a question later, so I don't want to give it away, but I thought he had some plays taken away from him. And the narrative nationally is that this guy is terrible. And like you said, he's a young quarterback in a new scheme. It isn't an excuse. There's a play to Josh Bellamy stands out to me, where his vision and his mechanics break down. He should have just been able to square himself, get wide, and throw a dart over the top and score a touchdown there. He throws it out of bounds. These things I document every week on my series that I do, The Tape Never Lies, at bearsbarroom.com. Aldo Gandia actually tweeted out all those third down plays from bearsbarroom.com to give people a glimpse of what he's capable of. He's hot and cold. I've known a lot of hot and cold Hall of Famers. Brett Favre comes to mind. You know, guys were considered, Phil Simms was considered, he was going to be a bust. And then all of a sudden he get it. It takes a while, especially when you're learning, but the athleticism, the threat that he poses on a defense is there. What did you see of Mitch Trubisky? I know you mentioned a few things, but just overall wise, how did you see him, and what do you think of him moving forward?
I think that the jury's still out overall. I think that you've seen enough glimmers of hope, enough big plays, and I'll use those two big third down conversions. Mm-hmm. those were critical plays early on while the game was still in the balance. You know, there was still in question of how things were going as before the defensive scores. So, you know, those were two critical pickups on third and long that were some really pretty throws over the middle between the hashes. Those are big boy throws that a primetime NFL quarterback needs to be able to make. Now, as I said, I would say on all the throws over 10 yards, those might have been the only two good ones, but they were fantastic. So it shows you where the high-end ceiling is. And like any young quarterback, especially one that came in with a lot fewer reps than most quarterbacks come in with nowadays, and I think he's still earlier on, and you know, I'm a big fan of the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours model. He's probably earlier in that 10,000 hours, you know, way to mastery of the quarterback role than what other quarterbacks might be. You know, somebody who use Patrick Mahomes, who had a million reps at Texas Tech throwing for 70 times a game.
Right.
So, you know, being in that area, I think there's a legitimate reason for hope and for additional progression from Mitch Trubisky. And I will say, you know, I think the balance early on right now, he's such a weapon athletically to be able to pick up those third down conversions with his legs, be able to tuck it down and run, that I think you want to encourage that. You don't want to take that away. And you hope that as he develops and grows, that he slowly becomes more comfortable keeping his eyes down the field, being able to pick those things up, and then can use that as needed and doesn't feel the need to maybe depend on it like he maybe will in some games where the defense is really throwing a lot at him. So like any young quarterback, I think you're hoping for those glimmers of the high-end ceiling and then looking for, okay, can he make it more sustainable? Can he make it repeatable? Can you make it scalable where, hey, we can do this every week. We can put together these high efficiency, strong performances, catching all the short balls, getting them out in rhythm, on schedule, letting our playmakers make the plays, and then also making the big high-end plays and the big-time plays. So I think that it's very much we try to read it through the same lens that we're at looking a year behind with Josh Allen, in that if I'm in the position that you guys are next year, I'm going to be really happy. That's going to mean that we've made a lot of progress, that you're seeing a lot more reasons for hope than reasons for doubt. And although everything's not perfect, there's a lot of reason to think, hey, I think we have our guy. And if I was a Bears fan, I would feel that way. I think that you guys have your guy.
Now I'm going to make you the GM of the Buffalo Bills.
From your lips to God's ears.
So I'm going to give you, you know, when they do those, you know, expansion franchise drafts, I'm going to let you choose two players on the Chicago Bears that you would absolutely love to be Buffalo Bills. Any players you want, go ahead.
I'm not going to take a cop out. Obviously, the number one answer is going to be Khalil Mack. He is franchise level player. Simply because the Bills
wasn't in the game.
Yeah,
so we don't count him.
Yeah, won't count him. And like we said earlier, the Bills are okay on defense. He would make any defense, you know, exponentially better. But I won't take the cop out. I won't cheat and take Khalil Mack. I'm gonna go with one surprising player. I'd love to have a young, growing offensive lineman. I think you have a couple that are intriguing, but maybe Cody Whitehair.
Oh, I love him.
So I'd love to have a piece like that where, you know, he's still on his rookie contract, still growing, maybe coming into where you feel like, hey, we're going to be able to extend this guy and might have a Pro Bowl center moving forward and just a guy that's talented interior. I think he's flexible and can play multiple spots. That would be a great piece for me. And the other one is, again, I think Allen Robinson's a great top-end talent. I would love to have someone like that. But again, if I'm building a franchise, I'd love to have Anthony Miller. I think Anthony Miller is, you know, a modern NFL receiver who can get loose in space. Maybe he's not, you know, Julio Jones in that physical specimen of 6'5", 220, you know, and running a 4'3". but he's so good at playing receiver. And I'm not going to be blasphemous and say he's Jerry Rice, but he has that kind of game to him where it's so smooth and it looks so easy in and out of his breaks and being able to make plays that I think he's a guy that at minimum is going to play for 12 or 15 years as a productive receiver in the NFL and might have some really nice flashes at points in his career. So I'll go a little bit off the radar, and I would cherry pick Cody Whitehair and Anthony Miller.
Wow. I am surprised at those two picks, but it's such a great exercise because I want to see from another person's perspective how they not only view the roster, but how they would view putting the pieces on their own roster from another. Because you guys, like you said, you have $90 million in cap space. I got to ask you a Buffalo Bills question. I know barflies get a little fired up. I got three more questions, and then we're going to get into our favorite segment, Aldo's mama's favorite segment, Feel the Love. But, you know, I look at this game here, and I see the Bears battling the Bills, and historically, I see two teams that are similar, but and you talked about the $90 million. So I got to ask you, what makes a free agent want to come to Buffalo over a team like Kansas City, who will have like 40 plus, or Houston with 60 plus million in space? I know you guys have 90 million. So just give me that sales pitch of what you think the Bills are selling. Because in case you don't know, in case my boy Aaron Quinn didn't inform you, I'm a huge Josh Allen truther. I've always said it. I defended him. I honestly had him ranked over a Mitchell Trubisky. I think the ceiling and the talent is so immense there of that kid. So I can attest that he would make a difference in that kind of football game because of what Mitchell can do is run the football, and this kid's tall. He has all the traits I like. So is he your selling point? Am I stealing your sales pitch? You tell me.
That's a little piece of it. And I would say that, again, as you had brought up, whether you – I won't get into ranking per se because I think there are different phases in where they're at. But I think they're very similar in great athletes who can use that as an escape hatch early on, but you want to see them get away from that and learn how to navigate the pocket and use their arm and dissect the defense. And I think we've seen – similar flashes that you guys saw last year from Mitchell and that now we're seeing from Josh that give us reason for hope, but still not consistent enough to feel secure that, oh, we absolutely have our guy. So I think he's shown enough top end upside that there's reason that you can use that at least as a net neutral. That's not a negative that you have to worry about. Hey, what the hell are you guys doing at quarterback? I think you can use that to neutralize it. Our sales pitch is going to be a combination of things. I think one, in the NFL, money talks. And granted, I don't think the Bills are going to be in a position where they're going to overpay ridiculously, but we're obviously going to pay full market price for guys that are going to be coming into Buffalo right now. And that's okay. I mean, that's what it takes. And we still need the talent. And I'll use an example like you brought up. So if you have an opportunity to go to Kansas City and, hey, they're offering a contract, but, hey, we'd love for you to come in. We think you could be a piece. If you do a great job, you could probably be fourth in the pecking order for targets here. You know, where the Bills can come in and say, hey, we need a number one target. Do you want to come in and establish yourself as a number one overall weapon and lead the team in targets? And I think we can offer that. And that may not be the fit for everyone, but I think the right guy that we can find will be able to come in and do that. So our other number one is going to be, pardon me, didn't want to cough on air, being able to go through. And I think a big selling point we have is Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott is a modern NFL coach. I think that we have some guys that have come in like Micah Hyde and multiple other free agents that we've brought in are going to be able to speak to the culture and the family atmosphere that he's bringing, that he sticks to his guys, he defends his guys, and he is building something here that I think you can get behind. If you take a look at the roster that was there last year versus what we have this year, it's not terribly different. Now, we made some changes and ate some contracts. Obviously, we didn't plan on losing two Pro Bowl linemen in Eric Wood and Richie Incognito. So that's kind of helped crumble some things there, and then starting with a rookie quarterback. But he took a very much below par roster to the playoffs last year and has already squeaked out some wins this year with arguably the worst roster in the NFL against two playoff teams last year, and shown that, hey, when we retool this, you can come be the key part of a really big rebuild. And as I think a lot of fans saw yesterday, even in a horrible season, the Bills fans still show up. Bills Mafia is still very real. You know, they're going to be here for this team, and that if you come in when things start to go right, it can be really special. And I think that, you know, obviously that's not going to be a selling point for everyone. There are going to be guys that just don't want to live in Buffalo, which I grew up there and I don't live there anymore, so I can certainly respect that. And you know, that's not going to be the right fit for everyone. But as McDermott and Brandon Bean talk about, they want to find the right guys. They want to find the guys who are the right fit there. And that may not be, you know, I try to calm down a lot of our guys on our side that, hey, we have $90 million. Please prepare yourself. That doesn't mean that it's going to be $5, $15 million superstars. What right. our $55 million in dead cap this year stole from us is the 10 or 12 $3 to $6 million NFL veteran contributors that have real depth and real talent, that we wouldn't be starting Vlad Dukas on the offensive line if we had that kind of talent. So I think that's really where a lot of this is going to come from.
How bad was the officiating yesterday in that game?
In both directions, there were some really, really terrible calls. If it was a closer game, I would have been really upset about it. It was so out of hand that, you know, it didn't make a material difference in what was going on. But sadly, that's becoming, you know, a common refrain that we're singing that chorus every week. It's rare that we walk out of a game nowadays and don't have, you know, bitterness and frustration, sadly, usually from both sides of the fence after each game. So I think the NFL is in a really tough spot. They put these referees in a no-win position, especially how impactful some of those, you know, roughing the quarterback kind of plays are. I think later on, you know, if the Bills were in the game and that we were getting some of the calls later on that we were getting, I think that it would have been a much bigger deal. There were a couple of the earlier plays, and so heck, on the one interception, it blows my mind that you're allowed to just destroy the receiver, but it was close to 1 yard. So it is what it is. But yeah, it's sad that I think we're seeing more and more of those kind of situations where we can't walk away feeling clean, that we watched a really good competition and the best team simply won, that now you're seeing these impactful game changing calls that it can really become a problem for the NFL in the wrong spot.
Well, I think it is a huge problem. You know, like you, the game was the score, and thus I'm a stickler for the truth and calling a game appropriately and correctly. The pass interference call on Prince Amukamara in the end zone was about as good as, you know, the last burger of the night at Burger King. It's been sitting there all. It's just, it's ridiculous. I don't get why it can't be better, Greg. I don't get how much technology we have in advance of the old Polaroids on the sideline to now having all these cameras, all this ability and capability to help these guys. You got players getting thrown out of games. Granted, I can't stand the Packers, but I got to be honest.
That was ridiculous.
It's like, what are we doing here with this great game? I love it so much that I'm even being honest and truthful about my most dreaded piss green and yellow rival. That kid shouldn't have been thrown out of the game. So I look at that game yesterday, and you're right on both ends. The face mask call on Roquan, he never even touched the guy's face. It just takes away from the flow of the game. It takes away from all of the deliciousness of what football Americano is. And it's really almost like becoming, you know, actors falling down, yellow cards handed up. No offense, my boy John Bradley across the pond. It's becoming like a soccer match, as we can't touch, we can't hit, we can't do this. It's not called right. This is happening. So can technology come into officiating? Should these roughing the passers calls be reviewed? Should face mask penalties be reviewed? Getting it right was why the review system came into play. Are we at that point?
I don't know what the right answer is, because I do think that we need to be sensitive to the length of time of the game. Mm-hmm. I want consistency. I know Tampa Bears fan in the chat is talking about, there were a couple early on that, granted, Nathan Peterman is what he is, but you know, he got racked in the head two or three times that they didn't call.
Yep.
You know, so there were some plays that, granted, again, that's not changing the score. It's not going to do anything. Heck, the Phillip Gaines is a horrible cornerback. He mauled the one receiver on the pass interference, but the second deep ball, that was a really iffy call. That, you know, I it makes me crazy that that's now part of the offense, and you guys don't do that, but I'm pretty sure that's like the Ravens' game plan. Is just to throw the ball deep and hope their receiver gets interfered with.
Right.
So it's just crazy that games like that, you know, a 50-yard penalty can change a game. I mean, that can really flip a game. So it's crazy to be able to put them in that position. I don't know, is the answer more officials on the field to have a better view? Is it simplifying some of the language of some of the calls? Is it making some things more reviewable? I actually think there's a step you can take that's a touch towards automation, but it's having more people using the video footage assigned to each game and in the ear of the officials, where you don't have to go to some in-depth, drawn-out review process. Have all the guys assigned. The NFL is making money hand over fist. Assign guys to every single camera view that are watching it, and then they can just beep into the referee's ear, like, hey, you missed that, but hey, they actually interfered with them here. You're good to go. You know, keep that call there. You can do that almost in real time to be able to do that. You don't need to take a commercial timeout. You don't need to go to the, you know, whatever their newest opportunity is for the Microsoft Surface tablet or whatever the hell you're trying to shill on the game. And you can keep the game moving, but have guys that are, you know, the eye in the sky doesn't lie. Just like we're breaking down film, you can help those referees out. It's impossible. You have 250-pound guys running a 4.440 flying in front of you. That's tough to call everything in real time. Help those guys out with more eyes on the different cameras. You have, you know, 12 to 16 cameras, sometimes 20 on primetime games. You know, help them out and put them there. Put a bug in their ear and be able to help them out in real time, where it doesn't need to be stopping the game. Because I think that's where you run into a lot of the issues, where they don't want to stop the game because they're worried about timing. So I think that's a happy medium, where you can have more guys there. Hell, give each referee, line official, back judge their partner in the camera.
And I like this.
You guys are a team. That's my guy who has the eye in the sky. He's helping confirm things for me. But each of them have the one guy in their ear, and that they can go back and forth and feel confident in their calls or dial it back. And that maybe they have – I actually wouldn't mind that throwing a flag means the potential of a penalty, not that there automatically is one. And, hey, I think I saw something. Going to confirm real quick.
Right.
All right, my guy's telling me that that's not a flag. We're good. Keep going. You know, just,
I like
you know,
this.
You can move that quickly. So that would be my two cents on how I'd try to approach it.
Well, it's a great two cents, and to really just get into it. I mean, I like this guy, Greg, because he seriously.
You need solutions. Like, it's easy to complain. You need solutions.
You need solutions is exactly where I was going. Referees could be the Secret Service agents of protecting the game and the integrity of it. PFF has what? 650 nerds all around the country grading tape instantly.
Yes.
So why not have these nerds knowing? Yeah, exactly. Let's outsource this to guys that know the game and know what the rules are, to talk to these officials, be in their ear. You know what? That ball might have moved. So let's look at it. That ball might have. No, that is a catch. That is a complete catch, and you move on. It's in their ear. there's so much time in between these plays and seconds, you can get it right. So honestly, Greg, that's pretty brilliant on your part. It makes a lot of sense. You know, Secret Service is sitting there getting updates to protect Donald Trump, for God's sake. They could get some updates with these referees to protect the integrity of the game that we're seeing lost here. It's ridiculous how bad the officiating was to me. And the Bears won that game, and I'm still pissed off at it. And
oh, yeah, no, it was ugly. It took away from the game, and that's
exactly
the biggest thing. It took away from the game.
And that's a problem. This is, honestly, in my rant, the greatest game in the world. Without a doubt, in my mind, I know what it is for me, the person, and what it's done for many people I know. And it's amazing. And what Goodell and these owners, the Lucky Sperm Club, where's Mikey, Uncle Mikey? These billionaires are ruining the game, the laws, and everyone trying to sell a lawsuit. Sign a waiver for them. Christ, I take my sons to the local trampoline house to jump around. I got to sign a waiver.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to play this game and make money off it, you know the risks. And who's going to not sign it to make that kind of money?
No one's turning down that contract.
Exactly. So let's regroup here. This whole offseason about the tackling drill, how many plays are not getting called? It's awful. And the officiating is ruining this game of football. I can't thank you enough for bringing that great point up. I'm going to use it, if you don't mind, to talk about in the future, because it's smart.
This is the sincerest form of flattery.
Well, my last question to you before we go into our next segment with Braggs. Should Bruce Irvin be a Chicago Bear this week?
I think you guys get him by default just by trading for Khalil Mack. I think you get the future rights to any other John Gruden brain fart. I'm pretty sure that that's how that works. But no, I mean, heck, it would be, honestly, a mild surprise if that's not his first stop. You know, I think that, you know, I don't think that you guys are in desperate need of another pass rusher, but in today's NFL, you can never have enough guys that can get to the quarterback. So, you know, if you have an opportunity to bring in a situational guy like that, who obviously is going to get a good recommendation from his former Padre, and that, you know, I can't lie. I know a little bit about you guys, but I don't know your exact cap situation. So I'm assuming, you know, he's not going to get a lot of money the rest of this year anyways, but I don't know if he's maybe the only thing I could think of is that his agent might be fishing out there for some kind of 1.5 year, you know, rest of this year and a chunk of money for next year. So if he's looking for just something to ride out the rest of this year, I think it makes a lot of sense to, you know, reunite with his brother there in Chicago.
Well, I know he has to clear waivers because there is that technicality, excuse me, that even I wasn't made aware of by another. Gabriel informed me that when you waive a player after the trading deadline, it doesn't matter if they're vested, they have to clear waivers. That means any team that signs him is going to have to take on his giant contract, which ultimately is probably not going to happen, but you never know. The New York Giants.
Have to remember, you're talking to a Bills fan and Sam Bradford just got waived. I am intimately familiar with the waiver process and what would be involved in potentially adding the toxic contract of Sam Bradford. So you are absolutely correct. Unfortunately, any team that does waive it, although if I remember correctly, weren't they both waived on the same day? I think they cleared today at 4:00. I think. Now, maybe Irvin was the day after, so maybe he's tomorrow at 4:00. But at the latest, it's tomorrow at 4:00. I think that both Bradford and Irvin cleared today at 4:00. And technically, right now, I'm confident their agent's having dinner with someone.
Well, boys, it's that time of the show. One of my favorite segments. Aldo's mom's favorite segment. Are you feeling the love tonight, boys?
Oh, yeah.
If it's Aldo's mom's favorite, I have no reason not to have it be my favorite as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's that time for us to pick that favorite player that you feel deserves the most love from yesterday's game. So I'm going to let Greg Thompson start it off first for us here in this segment.
I think I'm going to cheat and take something that I thought was going to be sneaky, but then, you know, I heard it right off the bat in the rant. Eddie Goldman was a monster yesterday and just, you know, really threw off the Bills' only chance at running an offense is establishing LeSean McCoy and Chris Ivory. And not that he was alone. Akeem Nicks was great. You had other guys contributing and really stepping up. Lynch looked good. But Goldman walked back our guards and center over and over and over. And there were a couple plays that I think he technically made the play without getting credit for the tackle. Plus, I think he had five tackles and a handful for a loss. That is a load of a man. And that's just something that, you know, really speaks to, you know, allowing those playmakers around him to do what he does and isn't always going to show up in the box score. But that's my man right there. I was feeling some love for Eddie Goldman.
Wow, I love it. I loved it in the rant. I loved it because I didn't hear Coach Nagy speak today because I was writing my rant and singing some songs because we do this show. It's the number one Bears podcast on the planet. It's called Bears 100 Proof, and I do these parody songs, Greg. So if we ever have you on that show, I might have to sing a song about you because that's like a tradition. But I'm singing a few songs. I got a few surprises, teaser for tomorrow night when we record Wednesday. That'll come out. But I was so busy, I didn't hear Coach Nagy praising your boy there, Eddie Goldman, my boy. And it was nice to hear the offensive coach giving a little love to the big man, number 91 today, the super producer. Greg, who do you got?
Oh,
Braggs.
Man. Braggs. Well, I'll tell you what, the guy that stood out to me that jumped off the screen was Roquan Smith. And I got to tell you, Aldo and Shane and Phil, you guys nailed it on 100 proof in your last episode. You guys were telling us he's everywhere. So I kind of keyed in on him for this game. And man, the speed just jumps off the television. It's unreal how sideline to sideline he gets. And he's in on the forced fumble. He leads the team in tackles, 13 tackles on the day. I feel like it was his best game as a pro.
Absolutely. The guy is a rookie. There's a couple plays where he's coming inside out and he over-pursued Shady on one play. But that's going to happen with a back like McCoy. I mean, what the Bears D did to McCoy, not to change the subject, was immense because Shady is a special back. I put him in that elite category with his agility, his vision, and his fluidity. To get to the hole, start, stop, and go, the Bears really bottled him up. And Roquan was a big part of that. I love it, Greg. I feel the love for him, too. Phil Collins. How do you not love Phil Collins? You know, I'm lucky enough to have the name of him because anytime I put Pandora on, like I'm in a sad mood, Greg, I put on Phil Collins and it cheers me up every time. It's never let me down. So if you're in a bad mood and you're not listening to, you know, Let's Talk It Out and you've gone away from that, put on some Phil Collins for yourself. Cheer yourself up. My guy that I was feeling the love for, you heard in the rant. He got paid. He got tagged. You can't let homegrown talent walk. This kid walks with a swagger that we haven't seen from a corner in, I don't even know, maybe Danelle Wolford and Peanut Tillman had that kind of swagger. But this guy has agility galore and toughness. Greg from Buffalo talked about it. It was a close play there where he just absolutely breaks on the football, breaks on the play, keeps his composure, and knocks the ball up in the air. He was involved in all the turnovers, the guys everywhere. And the most impressive play he almost made was on the two-point conversion. He goes up one-handed, almost pulls it down. That's the kind of athlete, that's the kind of attitude he's playing with. the confidence level. You could just tell he watches tape the way he plays. I'm so proud of this football player. Like, I always talk about, I don't buy jerseys, Greg. I just keep 22 and 34. I've been burned too many times with the likes of Julius Peppers and, you know, others. You know, Urlacher you can have and Briggs I'll take. But you've been burned a lot, let's face it. So in this case, 23, I mean, what a football player. I'm feeling the love, if you can't hear it in me, about Kyle Fuller tonight. I really want to just tip the hat to that young man. Can I get another Phil Collins drum roll again? No, seriously, I just need it. Oh, see, this guy's a super producer, Greg, from Buffalo. And he brings it for us. Speaking of super, how are the Barflies doing in the chat? We got AskBHL. I know Greg from Buffalo. Tom Set. Is that how I would say it?
It is, yeah, Tom Set.
Look at that. The Tom Set. The Tom Set.
Oh, man, the chat room's been lighting up all day, all night long with Greg filling us with this knowledge today. He's been really bringing it today for all the Barflies. And some of the questions that stood out, Shane had a question that stood out for me.
Hold up. We gotta do this right for the guests, Greg. We gotta ask BHL questions and chat. We got an intro for this.
Uh-oh.
That's how we go into AskBHL and open up the chat. Shane, the money man Marceau's in the chat tonight.
Oh yeah, he's been holding it down for all the Barflies in the chat room, and he had a great question for Greg. His question was, is McDermott and Dable the right duo for Josh Allen?
I'm 100% that McDermott's the guy. I am all in, full Kool-Aid drinker for Sean McDermott. He's, and again, I don't mean this from an accomplishment standpoint, but he's that Belichick kind of guy that is very much on, you know, keep your eye focused on the next day. Don't look too far down there. One day at a time, one practice at a time, one game at a time, but keeps people micro-focused on what they need to do. And I think that works in today's NFL. So I think McDermott's the guy. I'm not 100% sold on Dable, but I'm comfortable with the fact that we are so shorthanded on offense that I don't think we know whether he is or isn't. So I'm comfortable going into next year, giving him the opportunity to revamp probably multiple early draft picks, multiple major financial investments from free agency, stacking around Josh Allen, and then being able to build from there. And I'm hopeful that he's the guy, but I'm an awful lot more confident in McDermott than I am in Dable.
Okay, and as you know, Smug Maine wants to know, with big games from Aaron Lynch and Leonard Floyd yesterday, would you guys consider sitting Khalil Mack for another week?
I'm not. I think he's ready. You're going into the division. You're 5-3. You're facing off against Detroit, probably the biggest shit-talking fan base you've ever seen that's never been to a Super Bowl in their lifetimes. They've been rebuilding since 1952. And they've continued to run their mouths, and rightfully so, in the fact that they've beat us the last 7 times, I believe, we've faced them. So the time is now. This is the division now. Now's the time where you are going to put it on them. Khalil Mack jumping around, celebrating on the sideline, looks like his ankle's ready to rock and roll. You don't wait on that elite talent. When it's time to rock and roll, especially against the division, this is a huge game for the Chicago Bears, coming home to Soldier Field and taking on the Lions and sending a message to the whole NFC North that we are a complete team. You know, we have questions in special teams, but this personnel and on paper and what I've seen on tape is ready to take the next step. And this guy, as Greg from Buffalo said, is an elite edge rusher that's missing. So you have all this rotation going on and all these guys stepping up. It's time to bring them back.
No, and I'll just add to what you're saying that I think you guys had the luxury of the last 2 weeks playing mm-hmm. two of the poorest offenses in the NFL that you could afford to allow the rest of your defense to do that. Obviously, medical comes first. If there's any question of his long-term health, you don't mess around with that. But I have a feeling that if this past week was a playoff game or was the Packers game, he was exactly. going to be out on the field. So, you know, I don't think you mess around with that. With you guys have a gauntlet of three division games coming here. And if anything, maybe you limit his snaps and you just do high leverage, red zone, third downs, things like that, and ease him back in versus sitting him completely.
Absolutely. And Ryan KB34 was tweeting earlier today, should the Bears go to the Norv Turner route with Cam Newton and go with the quick passing game? He feels like the Bears going for the big play too much is hurting the offense a little bit. What do you guys think?
I think that the Chicago Bears need to use this number 24 guy that they got and use him at the mesh point. You've seen it. I mean, Greg, Tom Set, have you seen a back come downhill and punish a safety like that? I mean, I got out of my seat. Everybody knows how much I love Jordan Howard, so it's not a big secret here. But I think establishing that run, I think Nagy is starting to get it. Like, I still can't stand the short down and distance kind of quirky stuff that he decides to do and throwing the ball and going tight for me and be predictable on one play and then unpredictable. Just get into a rhythm with this guy. He had 15 carries. He should have had 25. He should have no less than 20 carries. I love the idea of doing a lot of what I love. I'm not scared whatsoever, Greg, about Mitchell running. Because from what I've seen on tape versus Tampa, versus Green Bay, versus every team he's faced, what he did to Jamal Adams is almost comical, how good of an athlete Mitchell is and how good of a runner is. You don't get away from that. You know, say what you want about Colin Kaepernick, but what he did was go to the Super Bowl. And what he did to the Green Bay Packers was embarrass them at every point possible by running spread game, option game, throwing over the top, getting half, you know, field reads, doing what you could do with an athlete. And I think Trubisky's a better passer and he's a great runner. Now, I just think that's a great point that Ryan's talking about and a great comp to do some of that action game and throw through the seam. Throw down the seam. And I think this game was a little difficult because of the scoring and the lack of, you know, reps. Think about if defense scores a touchdown, Greg. Now all of a sudden that's a series that goes away. So stat scouts miss it. I thought the offensive pass interference call was horrific on Trey Burton.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Oh, my God. And it really faulted a drive. It was a huge play there. Now, another great throw by him that goes unnoticed. I'll put it up on the tape, but it'll go unnoticed in the stat sheet. It goes unnoticed on ESPN. So every other person on Twitter named Andrew Link will probably – they won't notice it either. So I just try to do my best in telling you the truth, and I think, Ryan, I'm with you. Incorporate a lot of that Cam Newton-ness type of action game and spread stuff. Go ahead, Greg.
It's critical in today's NFL to have that athleticism at the quarterback position because it's so demoralizing when mm-hmm. your defense has fantastic coverage on third and four and then the quarterback runs and picks it up. And like you said, I'll even use Kaepernick. Kaepernick was a little thin to have the style that he had to stand up to that long term. Mitch is 6'3", 235. I mean, he's not a little boy, you know, so he's someone who can, you know, and granted, you want him to be smart. You want him to slide when he can. You want him to run and get out of bounds. You don't want him putting his shoulder down and taking on linebackers. But you can be smart. I think Russell Wilson has shown that you can be smart and run in today's NFL without exposing yourself to crazy hits all the time. So I think that's a big part of it. And to your point, I think historians are going to look back in 50 years and have no clue how this box score equated to 41-9. it's like, because, you know, I'm in the midst of the game. I'm not looking at the stats as you go, but then I'm prepping for my show last night and I go look and be like, wait, the Bills outgained the Bears? Like, how
exactly?
How did it? So, you know, and you look at, you know, there was almost 300 yards in penalty yardage. There was obviously all the defensive scores. This was a really weird game that I think threw both teams' game plans out the window. Nagy had no reason to have to put his foot on the gas pedal. You guys had some guys who were being eased back in from injury. There was no need to be able to risk that, but it did make it look a little bit weird in the after, you know, and especially like you said, all the crazy box score scouts that you see on Twitter that, you know, are certain they know what's going on. It's you know, odd to be able to see that wasn't really representative of what took place on the field.
Well, we got some more questions in the chat room. Steve Zim Zimmerman's got a Bills-oriented question for you, Greg, and he was wondering what player are you targeting right now? What player are you looking at in the college ranks that you want to see on your Bills team next year? Not any position or round in particular, but what's the player that you want to see most on the Bills next year from college?
Just the largest human possible. I am not a huge college fan beyond, you know, I watch, you know, if there's a big game, I watch Bama LSU the other night. I'll kind of have it on in the background as I'm running errands and doing stuff. But I didn't, growing up in Western New York, there's not a huge college, you know, set up there. So I've learned a little bit living down south now. So I do it more from a scouting standpoint. And then I trust a lot of our scouts over at Cover One. We've got, you know, Christian Page and Russell Brown are both outstanding scouts. So I'll trust them on which guy it is. Right now, it sounds like Jonah Williams from Alabama, maybe Greg Little from Ole Miss. You have the guy, it sounds like the guy from Washington is thinking about coming back to school next year. He would have been a top candidate. So I want someone to come protect Josh Allen. I'm open to the idea of a receiver, but I actually kind of want to go the Anthony Miller route. I'd love to use our second round pick to be able to get one of those guys. It sounds like this year's wide receiver draft is deep, but it doesn't have the AJ Green, Julio Jones, top five pick kind of guy. It sounds like it's going to be really deep from like the 25 to 45 range. So I'd love to say, you know, it looks like the Bills are probably drafting top five-ish. So, you know, the 35th to 40th pick there, I'd love to snag a receiver there. So if we can walk away with an offensive tackle or maybe a stud interior lineman, but someone who's great there, if that doesn't fit, I would love to trade down and pick up an asset and still go offense. You know, if we have to get a Greedy Williams or an Ed Oliver or some stud defensive player, you know, I'm okay making the defense even better, but I'd really love to find a way to align best player available with our tremendous need on offense and be able to plug in someone who's going to be able to help Josh Allen's development.
For sure. And, you know, my boy Aaron in the Shy and Chachi, they both were curious, you know, your guys' thoughts as far as why Kevin White was a healthy scratch, you know, and even ahead of guys like, you know, Michael Burton and Taquan Mizzle and Benny Cunningham. How did he not make it to the field and those guys did?
Just as an outsider, is it because he's not good at football?
I'm going to say this to that. If they watched the tape Never Lies, they would have known that in documenting, and maybe they're just setting this up for a spike, I'm just seeing a guy that's lazy and selfish in his routes. And I think a message was sent to him from the and a good one, and something that I have to applaud Coach Matt Nagy. You know, I'm hard on him because I expect the best. We've been handed the worst, the Tressmans, the Foxes, And if you don't expect greatness, you know, you play in a division where the coaching is just tremendous from, you know, the Patriots. So you have to combat that.
Oh,
here we are in Chicago, and we have coaches that aren't that great in the division, but are hyped up and handled a certain way where, you know, Aaron Rodgers can cover so many warts and the Vikings never win it. They get close. They never win it. It's like the Bears have been that team that has lacked the coach that's going to handle the situations with which players are held accountable. Winning is the most important, and putting the best players on the football field. So Kevin White's lack of effort and his abilities, like you said, or lack thereof, or he forgot how to play this game, or he mentally doesn't know the playbook. There's been numerous times they've had to call a timeout. He's not. How many times do you put up with that as a head coach? How many times do you go into the, you know, the film room on a Sunday, on a Monday morning, and you all see it, and positionally everybody else is prepared, but this guy you spent the first round pick on isn't, and you continue to send him out there. You have to send a message as a head coach. You're the reflection of you, this team. So another feather in Matt Nagy's visor for me.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek on the opening. It's a shame. I was a big fan of Kevin White coming out. And now I know, is it three straight years with broken bones? Is that what it's been? You know, I mean, that's just unbelievable to have that kind of that bad of luck to be able to do that. And honestly, it's probably robbed some of the passion and investment in the game when you've had to start over and over and over. So, you know, I get that. But if you're not seeing the kind of, you know, commitment that's needed there, then, you know, Matt Nagy's absolutely right. You can't allow that to permeate your locker room. Exactly. You can't allow that to be seen as acceptable in what you're putting together as a roster. So, you know, good on him to be able to send that message and allow that to be reinforced.
Well, we appreciate you answering all the Ask BHL questions. The chat room has been fired up all night. While you share us your insight, we really appreciate everything you've been bringing to the table, Greg.
Absolutely. No, thank you, guys. It was a great opportunity tonight. Like I said, it's hard to be able to keep, you know, focused there. But I shared that with my guys on the Cover One Buffalo and all of our Bills Mafia fans that, you know, I think that you can compartmentalize nowadays. You can be frustrated. You can be upset. You can call it an embarrassment and take out that frustration on an incredibly, you know, wholly unacceptable performance on Sunday, and still believe in what the team is doing, still believe that we have things going the right direction, and that we're going to have the right kind of team put together next year. And being able to differentiate that is honestly probably the difference in staying sane and being able to survive this season. But I look at the Bears as our model, is that, you know, I know that you guys were in a similar situation much of last year where you had some defensive performances that were probably better than what the overall team was getting. You had a rookie quarterback who wasn't surrounded by the kind of talent that you knew he was going to need to be successful, and probably even wondered and debated, can we even evaluate if he's going to be our guy? Without that, and then had faith that you were going to go in, obviously add the right kind of coach. I think Nagy looks like he can be the guy. Have faith in the front office to add the talent around them, and that's what Bills fans have to look for, is can we do what, you know, the Bears have done to build around Mitch Trubisky and to allow him to be in a position to succeed, and then to truly find out in an educated way, is he the answer? Is he the guy? And that's what we need to see in Buffalo. So we look to Chicago as our model and to be able to put that together. And hopefully we're in a similar situation next year to where you guys are at, where I think you guys rightfully are looking to, you know, look at a playoff run and just the beginning of building something really nice.
Well, it's nice to be looked up to as a big brother finally. You've been through a lot. I mean, you went through Buffalo, 4 Super Bowls, lost. I don't mean to drudge up things, but
no,
it's just like us Bears fan, we've got one, and they live off, and when I say they, I say the fan base and the franchise for too long lived off of 85, and albeit arguably or inarguably, in my mind, the greatest team of all time to ever get take this football field. And then, and that's it. And then you've had good teams and you've got to the Super Bowl and you lost. It's time to change a whole culture. And when you do that, it's very difficult. You have to have the right head coach. And it's nice to hear that you're confident in what you guys are doing. I'm confident. I'm hard because I'm tired. And I feel bad for a guy like Gandhi hitting his 60s, having to see this kind of crap go on for too long. And I know he gets fired up with me and what have you, but I want it too. I want this team to take that step. Speed kills. You could see it on the Bears, on both sides of the football. And I think we are going in the right. This game was very, very, very good for us on a playoff push standpoint to build confidence. So I thank you for coming on the show with me tonight. We had Greg Braggs Jr. moderating, Gandia behind the wheels of steel, the super producer. I got to tell Barflies, though, you guys got to be ready because this is going to be a podcast tonight. This is going to be a podcast tonight, and I got to do something before we get out of here. And I run down what all this stuff is. Greg Braggs brought it tonight, and he's reminding me, just as I asked him, I said, veterans, we are saluting to service. I asked you guys, I don't know if that's Greg, if you could mute. I asked you guys to send me if you served in the military. I want to shout you out on BHL. I don't normally do shout outs, but I had a bunch of you Barflies, Bears Barroom fans retweet and quote. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for helping keep us what we have in this great country. I want to salute your service by saying Joshua Dolph, thank you. U.S. Navy vet, 6 years. I want to thank Josh Dolph. Tim at TWS 8384, active duty since 2002. I want to thank you, Tim. I see you with your 22. Bobby Bombs, host on our show, promo extraordinaire, does it all just like he does. U.S. Merchant Marine Corps, hoorah. Chief Warrant Officer, thank you for your service, Bobby. The Gaines Report, my boy, Super Barfly, Greg. Gaines Report, Navy, thank you, Gaines. Chaz Plainin at U.S. Merchant Marine Corps Bears, hoorah. My boy, Aaron Curran, Army vet, the bearded Bears fan. Sent me a picture without his beard. The Kentucky Derby winner over there. I freaking love him, Aaron Curran. DDOS, thank you for your service. David M. Griffiths at Tucker Dad, at Trucker Dad 24. Thank you for your service. Ill Will, U.S. Army here. I love you, Ill Will. Joshua Action 90, thank you for your service. Brian Bammy 08, Marine Corps, hoorah. Thank you for your service. KG Akindario at KG AKINADRIJO. 11 years, Aldo, U.S. Navy, from the south side of Chicago, shouting you out. Grass Ninja, the Grass Ninja at Shifty Scent. 96 through 2000. Marine Corps, hoorah. Kevin at Crive, Kev number 2, 4 years in the Marine Corps, Semper Fi, hoorah. Patrick Sheldon at P underscore Sheld, thank you for your service, sir. B Mosky, how about him? Aldo met him in Detroit. B Mo knows at B Mo No Air Force, 8 years. 434th. I always give it back to the servicemen. Ida, can I even say this? Ida Ditka? I'm going to say it. That's his name. Where's little Nikki? I love little Nikki. At underscore Bears underscore fan. Thank you for your service, Air Force. I love these all. Andrew Hendershoff, 10 years in the Navy. Even though I always cheer for Army when they play Navy. And MJ Ogle, retired from the military. Those are my shout-outs to all of you that joined. We at Bears Barroom, we're getting the salute to service money to them, Greg, because let's just face it. Without them protecting this country, there is no football. There is no freedom. There is no greatness. And this country, for all its faults, still stands at its strongest. So I just wanted to shout them out, make the show a little longer. That's why the show is called Over One Straight Hour of Bears Talk in the song title. And last but not least, I got to thank you all for in the chat room. Those of you listening on the podcast, I want to thank Greg Thompson for totally bringing it. What a voice. What a human being. What a passion for the game. Great answering all the questions. And lastly, this is the week, guys. We go into Detroit. This is where you're going to want to be. It starts off on the podcast right here with Bears Hour Live with a look back at the Bills and what was with a look to the future against the Lions. And tomorrow, we are going to record the number one Bears podcast. It's not even an argument on the planet. Bears 100 Proof. That's going to hit your pod stream on Wednesday morning. And that's where we're going to announce another Super Barfly. We got a Super Barfly to announce and have some fun with. We have some guests coming on. It's going to be fun. Fun, fun show. Then that night, it's going to be Buffon 55, the fastest 30-minute podcast on the planet. Buffon always bringing it, prepping you for Detroit. I'm going to be listening in. Him and BG, who just got back. I know they had to pat her down like four times coming across the Niagara Falls border. Who knows what she was trying to bring back into her country, because everything we have in the U.S. is great. And I know she was trying to take some back, but she was able to get it back there. Probably swag from the Bears Barroom swag shop. Then you got Thursday, the Goon and the Tooch. I love little Nikki. And I love the Goon, Joe Mandel, helping me write a song that's going to appear on 100 Proof. Joe Mandel and the Goon on Thursday, giving you fantasy talk. And then the Uncle Mikey, Friday. He's going to bring it. He's the hottest prognosticator of football in the country. Mike North's Advantage Show with the super producer, Aldo Gandia. That's going to be fun, fun, fun. Give it a listen. And then it's Sunday. It's the Barfly Tailgate Show, where the Barflies interact and give you a three-hour course. Meals, double A's flipping burgers, Air Jairs drinking, Diddy is jumping on tables, Nikki's disappearing, he's like a magician. You got a Barflies coming on. It's a great time and it's a great show. I thought it was their best show that I've heard them do last week, preparing for a 41 to whatever 10, what was the score? Oh my God, I've already forgot, because I'm moving on to Detroit. 41-9 against the Bills. Thank you. And then that's it. So that is our show. Did we get any comments, Greg, from the chat? Were they fired up?
Oh man, everybody's saying great show, Ben Alexander. Great show. Good night all from Ben Alexandre. And we got Steve Zimmerman inviting us all out to Denver next year for the big Bears Broncos matchup, and a little some more in between. And we got all sorts of guys. It just had a great time on the chat room for the podcast tonight. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I thank you for coming on, bro. I really do thank you. You did a great job. And thank you again, Greg Thompson, for giving us your time and staying up late into the night.